We've gotten to the point now where that gap between the wealthier districts and the poorer districts is so great it's affecting the outcome of our students. So really, this commission was a realization that we need to come with a different funding mechanism. And one of the first things the commission dealt with was the fear that districts have they're going to lose what money they're currently getting from the state. So we immediately started talking about a foundation level or a hold harmless level for each school district. And then beyond that, what really was significant is we honed in on what's called an evidence-based model of funding education, where if you do the things, the best practices that research has shown us improve student learning, there's roughly 27 of these different areas. If you do those, you'll come up with an adequacy number or a cost for educating students based on the needs of the students that you have. And I think it's even more significant that there was agreement that we need to get away from the 26% that the state currently funds to something closer to 50%, which is what the constitutional framers had suggested in the Constitution.
When you talk about an evidence-based model and the factors, what are a few of those factors that will really make the difference between one school district and another?
Well, clearly class size is important, but beyond the class size, it's the teacher's ability to deal with the students that he or she has. And that's where teacher coaches and mentors, instructional resource people are very critical. And then when you look at the rising poverty and low-income student count that we have, you really need to surround the student with more than just reading, writing, and arithmetic. There's social services. There's healthcare services. There's all kinds of psychological services that may be necessary. And those are part of the 27 elements. And then if you have a concentration of lower-income students, they really need more than what you can provide in the school day. So after-school programs are important. Summer school programs are important for students to catch up. And then counseling, mentoring of students directly are critical. And all of that is part of the 27 factors.
You've been on education committees for a long time in the legislature. How big of a step is this in the right direction, do you think?
Well, I think in the sporting vernacular, this is a game changer.
Okay.
To bring both the chambers together, to bring both parties together, and have an acknowledgement that what we're doing can't continue. We're really spoiling too many lives. We're missing too many opportunities. And it's time to take action. And those that are wealthy, you know, bless you that you have those resources. If you want to keep high property taxes, that's your right. But a part of what I think will be the final legislation might also be the opportunity for taxpayers to say, well, if we're funding well above the adequacy level, maybe we could lower our taxes a little bit and give some property tax relief that I hear from all corners of the state.
I've seen a cost estimate up to $6 billion on this, because if we're not talking cutting, it's going to cost something.
Well, I know that part of the objection to the evidence-based model is going to be the cost of education. But if we look historically what we've been doing in this state, we're defunding not only K-12 education, but also higher education. And the ramifications of that defunding are going to be felt for generations upon generations. Illinois has always had an advantage in that we had great educational institutions. Kids were getting good foundational education in K-12, and then we had some wonderful community college and four-year universities to add to that. But by defunding it the way the state has been doing, that puts too much burden on the student. And that's really what government is intended to do, is to help spread the cost of those areas that feel are the priority areas and help make those costs manageable. And we haven't done that. And over the last 4 years, or 6 years actually, we've had what we've called an education funding advisory board that has set what they thought the average school district should pay per student. And we've held that flat for 6 years at $6,119. And every year we said, sure, that's underfunding, but we can't afford it. And we can't afford it. And we can't afford it. Well, the piper needs to be paid at some point, and I think now is that time. Some of the estimates are that the evidence-based model might cost another $3 to $4 billion. But if we get the state to pay more than 26% of the cost of education, it's going to be much more than $3 to $4 billion. And I think that's where we need to look at what is an equitable way to collect the funding that we need to educate our next generation. It's a discussion that citizens should have. And we can't just, you know, shrug it off and say, well, I don't have kids in school, or, you know, an educated workforce doesn't affect me. Well, it does. Businesses don't come here if they don't think we've got a quality workforce. And if we don't have good regulations and many of the other things that the governor is fighting for. That's why we've got to have some reforms along with revenue increases and some spending decreases. We've got to be making tough choices like individuals make all the time. So the task force that looked at funding reform presented what we thought was a framework of ideas that needed to be incorporated into legislation. There were some areas that we didn't come to a bipartisan agreement, but I think can be hammered out in the normal legislative process. And one of those items was mandate relief. There are a lot of districts that say, well, we're well-to-do. We won't be getting any more state dollars. Is there anything you can do to help us cut costs? And maybe there are some courses that we don't need to offer that the state has mandated that we offer. And we've looked at those. What school superintendents tend to suggest all the time is really three or four areas. And one of those tends to be in the area of everyday PE. Driver's education is another one that they suggest could maybe be outsourced. And a third area is really outsourcing of services that don't relate to education, like the janitorial or the food service or even transportation. And these are areas that have been suggested we look at. The commission couldn't get agreement that those were not essential. But really what the proposal was is that we let local school districts decide if those are things that are critical or not critical. Take driver's ed, for example. Genoa Kingston in our area has outsourced their driver's ed for a number of years, and I've not heard any complaints. Parents seem to be satisfied. Students are satisfied, and the school district is doing it at a lesser cost than what they were before. Those are the kinds of options we ought to give school districts instead of driving mandates out of Springfield all the time.
What kind of response are you getting from other lawmakers outside this committee?
Well, this will be the first week of session since the commission came up with its report. And this is where I expect to see some dialogue. I will be talking to the Republican caucus in the House this week to try to emphasize some of the major points. I'm sure there will be people that say the state shouldn't cut any funding that they've currently been doing. And I think we've tried to protect that. There's others that say, well, we must have mandate relief and we must have property tax relief. Well, the commission reports couldn't come up with those right now. And I'm not sure we're going to see those anytime soon. The best property tax relief is going to be getting the state to pay its responsibility and getting it off of property taxpayers, and in the case of higher education, getting it off the back of students. So these are things that are going to take time, but I think with a discussion about how we solve them rather than just putting Band-Aids on them will get us closer to longer-term solutions.
Before we get into higher ed, how do you think education in Illinois will be affected or would be affected by an education secretary with a focus on privatization and charters?
There's no doubt that the federal government has a lot of influence on states. That wasn't the intent of the founding fathers. They said the federal government ought to have very limited responsibilities, and the states would be free to do those things that the people in those areas wanted. Therefore, I'm always a little skeptical of a top-down type of approach. And we have seen some of that top down, but it hasn't been successful. I think the federal law, the Every Student Succeeds Act that was passed here recently, is a step in the right direction that gives local states the opportunity to come up with their own educational plan and help every student succeed. And we are doing that in Illinois. We've had lots of meetings. The Board of Education has done an excellent job of getting public input. And I think we now are going to see a model here in the next month or so of what they feel ought to be measurable student progress. And if we're not getting that measurable student progress, that's where we come back to what the Funding Commission came up with of the 27 elements. And if a school district doesn't get the success that we would expect them to get with their students, then are they using the right best practices? And then we can put pressure on school districts to perhaps look at the best practices. So I think all of that is a step in the right direction of the states determining and local school districts determining what's the best kind of education. Certainly, the federal government is going to perhaps in the next 4 years talk a little bit more about charters than we've had, but we've had charters in Illinois for a long time. We've had charter laws that have allowed so many charter schools, and we don't have that many charter schools. So while there may be a demand, we haven't fulfilled that with the capabilities that we have today. I think the major issue we need to keep coming back to is, are the school districts responsive to the needs of the students they have and providing the quality education that will help them grow? That's everyone's responsibility to make sure their school districts are doing that. We've required school districts to have report cards, and those report cards talk about these kinds of issues. They'll be talking more about the transparency of funding. And I think with that information, with the student outcome information, citizens should be more active in their school districts because education really is the key to the future of our economy.
What are the permanent effects of the funding delays and the cuts in higher education?
I'm reluctant to say anything is a permanent effect because I think there's great resiliency in our educational institutions to handle the challenges they've been given over the last 20 years, really, because the state has been defunding probably since the 1970s, in fact. You look at the investment that the state has made in a student's education to where we are today. We've gone from something like $12 to $13 per $1 that the student put in to now something like 30 cents to $1 that the student puts in.
Wow.
That's a huge defunding of higher education. And yet our institutions have managed to survive. And I think part of the damage that has caused, though, is that a lot of students haven't been able to afford to go to college, or they took out huge debts to go to college. And that really is tying both hands behind someone's back when they start to go into the world of work and you've got to pay that debt, let alone try to perhaps start a family, buy a home, and do all the things that families have done in the past. So those would be the long-term effects, is we've changed kind of the curve that people don't expect to own a home now, or they don't ever expect to be debt-free. We need to get back to the point where people can be those things, because when people are financially independent, I think then they become able to be more engaged in their communities, to provide the kind of philanthropy that a lot of nonprofits and other organizations depend on to provide those enhancements that make the quality of life so enjoyable in our particular area.
Is there any legislation you see or coming up that would help a school like, say, Northern Illinois University?
I think the best help the state legislature can give is to pass a balanced budget, and a balanced budget that realizes the priorities that we have. The governor and many, many legislators say education is a priority. I certainly feel that. And if we feel that, then that should receive a lion's share of what our funding is. I also believe that if we're able to give the educational tools that people need so that they can find those jobs, those good-paying jobs that improve their lifestyle, we'll have fewer and fewer people on the public service end of the priorities that the state has, because we do need to provide a safety net. But we have well too many people on that safety net right now. We need to help people get off of that safety net and get back into the world of work and improving their quality of life and really their career aspirations. I think that's where education can pay. And if we invest in it through the budgeting process, I think we can get to that kind of goal. But clearly, we're going to have to take more revenue. We're going to have to look very carefully at our spending priorities, and we're going to have to do something that will move us further down the road of encouraging businesses to come to Illinois and to growing our economy. The University of Illinois Institute for Government and Public Affairs just recently produced a study as a part of their Fiscal Futures ongoing program, where they looked at, can the state just look at revenue or just look at cuts to get where we need to be in 5 or 10 years and get out of this budgetary hole year after year? And they said it's impossible to look at just cuts and just revenue. You've got to look at growing the economy. And that comes back to some of the ideas that the governor has been talking about, where we look at regulations and the time it takes to get a permit, where we're looking at the overarching amount of regulations that businesses have to go through, where we look at workers' compensation reforms that don't make sense when you look at a medical bill for a person that's injured and then a medical bill for a person that's injured at the job. Why aren't they the same? And they're not. So we've got to look at the cost of our workman compensation. We've got to look at unemployment insurance, which tends to be among the highest in the country. And we need to look at some of our tort reform that has called Illinois the most litigious state in the nation. If we can lower the cost of doing business in the state, I think you'll see a lot more people wanting to come here, because we are at the center of the country. We have a huge consumer base here. We have great transportation, great natural resources. There's no reason that Illinois can't be growing and our economy can't be setting the nation on fire. Instead, we're lagging the states around us, and we're lagging the national growth pattern. It's because of all these other things that breed uncertainty, and businesses don't like uncertainty. Taxes is an uncertainty. Well, let's deal with a tax issue. Let's deal with a balanced budget for a change, and let's deal with some of these regulations. Then we can get our economy moving again.
I worry about our universities, our colleges and universities, and what this is doing to their reputation.
Well, I think the funding issue is causing a lot of uncertainty that is forcing students to look at the lowest cost place to go to education. And I think that's why we're seeing a lot of our students leaving Illinois to get their higher education. And what I fear is that if they leave for the educational reason, maybe that first job or the internship that leads to a first job will be in another state. And we've lost that great entrepreneurial skill set that was just trained in the higher education institution. That's why I think we've got to get back and look at funding education at a stable level, that universities can look at their operating systems and their cost of doing business. They can look at a stable source of state revenue and then provide the kind of educational services that our students need today. And what we're doing right now is, yes, it's destroying a lot of the reputation, a lot of the infrastructure. We haven't had capital bills for universities probably for 20 years. We had a small capital bill in 2009, but that didn't really deal with many of the university infrastructure. I mean, we had money in there for Stevens Hall, for example. We've only gotten part of that money released. So even though we had something, it wasn't enough to keep the infrastructure in good condition and repair. And it's hundreds of millions, billions of dollars in facility costs. That may be one of the things that all of this education funding is going to shake out, is that maybe we have too many institutions and maybe we can't afford all of those physical plants. So we're going to have to maybe come back and look at what is a regional approach? What are the best research institutions that are going to produce the next innovations that will grow our economy, and focus our state resources more closely on a few rather than as many as we have? That's not going to be as convenient for the student, but there's a cost for convenience. And Illinois is struggling with being able to pay for even the basics, let alone something that may be more convenient.